Hello, welcome to the Hotel Show from the British Tech Network with me, stuck in a hotel, beautiful as it is. We're doing the F1 show via Joe DeMax switching for us. Thank you, Joe. And it so far has gone absolutely fine while we've not been talking about anything that's worthwhile, which means it's obviously going to go terribly wrong in the next few seconds when we actually start the show. We're here to discuss the Grand Prix this weekend from Malaysia, which was up and down, really. I've got mixed feelings, I have to say. Joining me, I've got a fabulous panel, as normal. Making his return after missing last week's show, top left, we've got Mr. Tony Blunt. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, hey, I'm really good. Sorry, I failed to actually...
Go, Blunt, you sound excited.
I was the HRT of the show, I know.
What, hormone replacement therapy?
You're outside the 107% rule.
Yeah, I was more the De La Rosa rather than the Kathakayan, though.
In position 26. Right, you'll be with us. You saw it, I take it.
Yep.
Right, good lad, that's a start. I've only just finished watching. Next to him, Mr. Room Service himself, Steve Neighbour.
Hello, sir, how are you?
What have you ordered for me?
What?
I made the mistake of giving out the room number that I'm in. Steve has done something on the phone, and there is likely to be a bang at the door soon.
The curry surprise.
We'll see. I'm not too bad at all.
Excellent. Sorry I didn't come back Saturday night, but I was bloody knackered. I don't know what happened.
With a photo walk, didn't we, in London on Saturday?
Yeah, I just hit a wall, mate. And after that walk via... Where did we go via? Did we go via Westminster? Back to your place?
Well, I met you in the pub at 2 o'clock and then left you in the pub.
I don't think drinking heavily had anything to do with my fatigue. I really don't.
You've fallen asleep in the pub.
I was pretty bad, actually. Next to Steve, below, we have Sarah Jane. How you doing, Mrs.?
I'm very well, thank you.
The proud receiver of tweets prior to the race and knows the result before she even started.
It was quali, actually. I managed to actually almost avoid the race result until about 10 minutes before when I stupidly, I was setting up my notes for the show and thought I could get away with looking at the grid because I still didn't know the complete grid without actually going via the BBC Formula One homepage. Got it wrong and learned who came first and second before the coverage.
Could have said that. You could have predicted that before we started.
We need to talk about strategies to avoid the...
don't put Twitter on.
Well, no. If I hadn't left my notes, starting my notes till quite so late, then if I'd done it on Saturday afternoon or Saturday evening, I'd have been fine.
Well, I predict that most people listening to this are tech nerds like us. And we need to come together in some type of community that works out how to not pick up the iPad, the iPhone, the Android, whatever, for the first 5 hours or 10 hours of the Sunday when the Grand Prix is going on.
Just don't do it. I mean, I didn't pay bloody 50-odd quid a month for Sky, so I could wait till you'd seen it.
Well, my name's Steve, and I'm a tech nerd, and I find it quite hard. There you go, I've said it.
Oh, it's
maybe we need to rig some system where you get an electric shock if you go onto certain... read certain
that's a
things.
Bit, that's a bit extreme, Tony.
Don't start with your fetishes here, Mr. Blunt.
So there's a great suggestion from the chat room already. Self-discipline, there we go.
Yes, they're right.
Wouldn't
yes,
that be an innovation?
Very true.
Right, moving on. Last but by no means least, a very rushed and harassed man. He was sat at work at 8 o'clock thinking, I'm going to be back home in time. Chris W., how you doing, man? Mr. Woods?
Hello, sir. Hello. Thank you for that illustrious introduction. I really appreciate it. Yeah, the hour caught me out because I don't seem to work to regular hours. I work by daylight. It's like being medieval. And then, of course, because the hour's gone forward, it's lighter later. And I'm like... But technology saved me in this case, because had I not seen that email from Twitter saying you mentioned me, I would have been late. Could have been doing it from work. Gold records behind me. Yeah, it would have been great.
The Malaysian Grand Prix, then. The second one of the season. Jensen in fine form. Mr. Hamilton in fine form, it would seem, blocking out rows one and two of the grid. Did it look like it was going to be a bit pedestrian, or were we salivating?
I was hoping it was going to be a 1-2.
I think the weather, when the build-up started, it looked like the weather, from that weather, they said, oh, it's a bit wet, it's cold, you knew it wasn't going to be the same at the front by the end of it. But that's a brilliant thing, though.
But you'd have put your money on Jensen if you knew it was going to rain, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
Canada last year.
Yeah. Well, yes, exactly. I mean, he handed Vettel, didn't he?
And Malaysia 3 years ago as well.
But it was quite the opposite, as it turned out in the race, but never mind, eh? What about Kimi Raikkonen then? So, penalty for gearbox change. I mean, is the gearbox rule fair or unfair, do we think?
I think it's rare. It's the same as the engine. The number of engines they get, it's purely to make it easier for the less well-off teams, isn't it, really? And I think it can only add to the sport. Otherwise, it becomes elitist and we get the more money that you get pumped into the sport, the bigger teams run away with it and it becomes a bit boring.
Or you end up as used to happen where, you know, nearly every race you'd have an engine or something blowing up. And, I think cars wrecked everywhere, which is so unbelievably expensive.
And a waste as well.
Yeah.
It's good. The way to push engineering is give everyone the same rules. Let's see how far we can design something. Let's see how far we can then push it. And then how do we make it compliant? We ensure that only people have so many gearboxes that they can use. It's good.
Well, you're going back to the 80s when Senna and Prost were running with Honda. Honda were upset at the fact they hadn't figured in the first five in a Grand Prix. And they redesigned the engine and rebuilt the engine in 3 days and sent them out, brand new ones. They just worked round the clock till the engines were producing a bigger output and they just put them on a plane and sent them straight over. And that's kind of gone now. So, it's not a money-led business in inverted commas. I know it is, but, there's 300 million a year on tyres. But there's, it's not, you can't chuck money at the problem and solve it anymore.
Well, even in the BBC coverage, it was mentioned about, the differences in budgets that there still is between, the Ferraris and the McLarens and the newer teams, the Lotus, Caterham, the HRTs. And it was still quite... In the millions difference.
Yeah, I mean, budgets. The thing is, it cuts it down in certain areas, but there's a still unlimited amount that you can spend on aerodynamics using in wind tunnels and so on and so forth. Which is how
Mercedes have come up with their new system, haven't they?
That's right, yeah.
Did anyone watch the Sky coverage?
No? Are you just trying to rub it in?
No, because you've got to get
your strategy here.
Have you seen any footage? No, stop, Steve.
You know, Sarah's messed up because she saw the results before she should have. Has anyone seen the Sky coverage?
No, because what I'm going to talk about is, I know we took the mickey out of the feated dwarf Georgie last week. Has anyone noticed Damon Hill? Because Damon Hill has suddenly decided to turn into the most incompetent person you've ever heard in your life. He is Murray Walker, but without an excuse at the moment.
Yeah, and without the entertainment factor of that. Because I did see a few bits of video of the... it was the same with the actual commentary they had. They had Brundle, getting it right every time. And David Croft, he was pretty much being like Ledyard was, get everything wrong.
Yeah, but David Cross is an arse who knows nothing. He's there just to yabber and get the thing started, and I can live with that, but he's not very good anyway. But Damon Hill is supposed to be competent, and he's sitting talking about Kimi Raikkonen getting a penalty for a gearbox change. He's like, well, I don't think it's fair. I think it's wrong that they do this. It's really bad. He was like a mixture of Vivian and Murray Walker. And then at the end, it was like, well, they turned to Brundle and Brundle to, well, of course, Damon, the F in F1 doesn't stand for fair. It stands for formula. And there's a formula, which is a set of rules that you have to work to, and everyone has to abide by them. Yeah, but I think he's wrong. And it was...
Yeah, but he thought it was wrong when Silverstone lost the British Grand Prix as well, to Donaldson.
He kind of had an agenda there.
Yeah.
He was like a child, and when they cut back to him on something technical, you really thought he was blagging it. He really was making it up. Brundle was carrying him.
So you could almost not tell that he ever had any input in or knowledge of the cars he was driving. Almost, it's some of the things he was coming out with.
Hang on a second.
Where have you gone?
See what Mr. Neighbours ordered.
What?
Ah.
Where's he gone?
find out what you ordered.
Can we hear the music in the background?
I bet you've ordered him some mead, haven't you?
Hotels in Heathrow don't have much mead.
No, you send it round by special delivery.
Well, there's a gap in the market, isn't there?
Does his hotel door have a proper bell on it?
I didn't hear a bell. He's just pretending.
I thought I heard a telephone.
Either that or he's jerry-rigged a BlackBerry to ring when someone comes to the door.
Yeah. Yes. Just so everyone knows, Ewan's now left the microphone. He can't be bothered about like his broadcasting lark anymore.
Hello?
He's run away from us.
That sounded like glass.
You know, I've had to put me... Mr. Neighbour, thank you. I have a cellophane-covered beer. There we go. It's a beer, but it's a beer with cling film on it.
That's ingenious.
That's very clever, isn't it? Yeah, it's a good way of making sure it doesn't spill any.
Well, it's either that or it's a really bad skin and it's bad beer. But cheers, everybody. Thank you, Mr. Neighbour.
I don't want to think about you, Ewan.
Do you think it would pass the Helter Skelter test?
No.
What's the Helter Skelter test? Right.
German market test. You go to the German market at Christmas in Birmingham. You get a beer and you go down the Helter Skelter with it.
How many beers did they give you?
Well, as many as you want to buy, really. €2 for the glass. You get to keep the glass if you want.
Blimey.
You don't get to keep it.
You can double fist. If you're feeling professional, you can do hands-free and go double-fisted.
Moving on.
Ewan, how many beers did Ewan's room service bring you?
They brought me two cellophane beers.
Good.
You're a star, Mr. Neighbour.
I'm glad I gave the number out now.
See, it does have
anyone else wants to order you and a something on room service? His room number is
4116.
Don't even
but no, I've seen phone calls at 2 a.m. please.
By the time this goes out, it won't matter.
I was tempted to go to Domino Pizza.
How many
pizza,
nights are you there for,
Ewan? I could order in time.
Right, now Ewan's refueled.
Three nights.
Back to the F1 then.
Back to the F1. No, anyway, Damon Hill, I think, he's sitting there taking the money and he's lost. He's utterly lost. He's been sat in Berkshire or somewhere like that, reading the Times all week, Sunday Times, and someone said, do you fancy doing some F1 work? And he's gone, oh, okay, yeah, that'd be good. And he hasn't got a clue.
He's the Massa of the commentators at the moment.
Well we say that Massa's not got a clue at the moment because he's still not been sacked, has he?
Sounds a bit like Damon then, doesn't it?
There's a theory on this. Remember last week we were talking about the Sky picture that is on the front page of their coverage, and it basically everyone's got their video advertising how they're great for Sky and what they're doing for improving coverage, and then there's Damon Hill has no video and he's not, it just looks like he's not interested on that Sky website. And then he's pretending to be crap. So he's going on the footballer manager strategy. Get crap, get sacked, and therefore you walk away a big paycheck. That's his strategy.
Well, Jenks in the chat room said
he's, wasn't it?
Jenks in the chat room has pointed out that he's on contract, so they can't boot him out. They've got to just buy him out or just ride it out.
There you go.
That's exactly what Steve was saying.
Which is what
unless he gets comedic, they can't ride it out.
Well, they put him over to the football, didn't they?
Dick Emery. Right. Qualifying. What do we think of qualifying? Did it go kind of as planned? Game plan? Vettel probably isn't very happy, is he? Because he would have been kicked out by Kimi at fifth if it hadn't been for Kimi's penalty.
Yes.
So he ended up fifth because Kimi wasn't there. Otherwise, he'd have been sixth. I mean, the cars seem a lot more level this year, don't they?
Mm.
Yeah, is this a rule change that's done it, or is there, you know, the cars behind come up to the standard, or have they managed to level the playing field with a change in the rules?
It is a lot more level, definitely. I mean, you know, and even down to the pole lap, you know, Lewis put that in quite early in Q3, didn't he? That actual fastest lap. And that's the same thing he did in Australia. Pumped that in early and the others just couldn't get there.
They've had quite a few regulation changes, haven't they, since last season?
Go ahead, Chris.
Well, I have this mad theory that the car's performance is not that dissimilar from last year's performance. It's just the blown diffuser is gone and that was making most of the difference.
Mm.
So you think that one thing has made the difference? To pull in back Red Bull?
Largely, because the cars are mostly iterations of last year's car.
So where's the HRT surge and the other cars coming forwards? Williams had a pretty good turnout until the very end with Maldonado.
Williams, yes, Williams being probably the most obvious exception. They have just fixed whatever they did wrong last year.
Yeah. Mm.
But
what about the rumours of cars doing things that they shouldn't be doing?
Yes.
Go on, more. What's this? What shouldn't they be doing?
I think it was on BBC, that renowned, world-renowned coverage of the F1 that's brilliant. They were saying that I think it was Eddie Georgian saying that there's some teams that are rumoured to be kind of talking the fact that other teams are doing things that they shouldn't be doing, as i.e. McLaren, might be kind of twisting the rules here, there and everywhere.
Are you referring to the front wing F-duct?
Possibly.
Possibly.
The F-duct is
going on year after year, though, isn't it? It's like there's always going to be one team going, oh, this team isn't doing that. It was double diffusers, it was blown diffusers. In the past, it's been the F-duct when that was first, put in a car. You know, things like that for years.
Tell me about
who can explain in layman's terms to me the F-duct without the obvious puns?
I'm going to ring up room service and see if I can get an F-duct delivered.
I want an F-duct into room 4116. I'm sorry, sir, we don't allow bestiality.
Deliver it from Enstone, go on.
It sticks out halfway up the nose cone, doesn't it?
Well, in the
there wasn't meant to be any double entendre there.
Just say that again, sir. Slowly,
yes,
this time.
It's a way of redirecting airflow, isn't it?
From under the back of the car and out through the front, halfway up the nose cone, isn't it? Between the front axle and the driver's cockpit.
Yeah, which is the opposite to how it used to be. It used to be a slot in the sort of top of the monocoque that would end up airflow on the back wing, didn't it?
Mm.
Was the previous format for it.
Right, so... I mean, Jenks in the chat room has made a point that Christian Horner's pretty peed off and saying that the changes affect Red Bull far more than anyone else. And I've boosted a question back to him saying, what about the other teams that are coming up and doing more, though? And he said, well, some are, some aren't. The top two teams are going down. Ferrari had a horrible winter. Red Bull's trying different exhaust strategies. McLaren's ahead of the pack at the moment, but not this weekend, it would seem. But this weekend was a bit of a lottery, admittedly. First two races are the culmination of a few winter strategies being put into effect. I think China and then the European test will be the big indication of the developments and the mood going forwards, perhaps. So I paraphrase a little bit at the end there, but I mean, is this kind of really just suck it and see, settle around, see what's working, what's not working, and then kind of next week, 15th of April, is going to be the hit it with some venom.
Barcelona first European is normally the time when they get the first big package after the start of the season anyway. So this they're very much, while they're in the flyaway Grand Prix part of the season, they're very much a suck it and say, this is a major problem.
They had a week between races this time. They didn't really have any time to do major changes, upgrades. I mean, because they didn't even fly back to the UK or their bases, did they? They just went straight to Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
Go, Steve.
Sorry, Paul's come up with a good comment as well, saying that he feels that the new regs are designed to slow Red Bull down. That's not my comment, Mr. Lawyers. That's not mine. That's Paul's in the chat room. But that's really interesting. When you watch a Senna film and you can see the politics that are involved that used to happen in Red Bull, in Formula One, and then you kind of see the potential comments of... now politics being applied in the same way against the regulations to change them, to make it a more dynamic race, to make it more fair. That's what you need to do if you were trying to make your sport more watched by more people, make it more exciting, make it more fair, make it more equal. Change the regulations so that you slow the Red Bull team down. That'll do it.
It was the same that happened to Ferrari after, 5-6 years of straight domination.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Paul's making another... Jenks is making another point in the chat room here. Ultimately, the regulations designed to produce good viewing for fans. And I think that's exactly right, though. I don't have a problem with that because, you know, good on Red Bull for winning, good on Vettel for being dominant the last 2 years. But I got to say, if I'd have seen a third year of him being dominant with no levelling of the playing field, then, you know... You admired Shuey when he did it, you know, seven victories and that kind of stuff, but it's really boring. Monty winning the European Tour title. It goes same across every sport. Monty winning the European Tour title in golf seven straight years. I've got better things to do with my time than watch golf by the end of it. There was no close finishes. There was no fun. There was no enjoyment because Monty was going to be there. Monty was going to plug away in the background. He'd be in the top 10 and he'd win the tournament. You know, I think I agree.
The thing is, though, I mean, I think it's a fine... I can understand where Bernie and the others are coming from in terms of watching, but certainly when Shuey was winning all the time, there was a part of me that think, well, he was teaching the rest of them how to do it. It really was that the Ferrari had got every aspect of their game right and everybody else was struggling to keep up.
I kind of thought,
okay, it's not great to watch, but why is it... it's so unfair to penalise Ferrari... for the fact that they've been so successful and everyone else is falling over themselves to actually catch them.
Well, you say viewing figures were down. They wouldn't have been down in Germany or Italy, would they?
Well, true.
They would have had massive fall. It's like when Hamilton and Button were winning here. We probably, you know, record figures.
Yeah, I mean, I think Austria 2002 was a turning point for that because I think that's when it became blatantly obvious that Ferrari were manipulating things.
Well, here's an open question for everyone to answer as they see fit. Here's an open question for everyone to answer as they see fit. Chat room included here. So did the world formula stuff that Sky tried to promote a few years ago, where everyone drove exactly the same car, exactly the same setup, exactly the same engineering, did that fail because of the fact it was just a rival to F1 and F1 had got the foothold already, or did it fail because no one wanted that format? Because I think people would like the format, but they'd like it in F1.
That format, the closest we've got now is GP2, and that is still getting some ratings. But it's a feeder to Formula 1. You know, Formula 1 is still seen as the pinnacle.
Mm.
Whereas that, I mean, it was A1GP you're talking about there, the World Cup. Yeah. I mean, that I see that as more like GP2. It's like, yeah, probably brilliant to watch. But given the choice between that and Formula 1... You know, Formula 1 is what a lot of people would pick.
Do I need to order you more beer, Ian? How's it going?
No, I'm doing fine, thank you very much. I've got... I'm on my second one, I have to admit. The first one didn't last long, but this will last me till the end of the show, don't worry.
Is that the second?
Qualifying. That's the second one, yeah. Qualifying. I've got a reputation as a lush, apparently, now, so might as well live up to it. Now, there was an interesting statement made in qualifying. There was an interview with Hammy that was kind of him at Malaysia making reflections back on Australia. And he came out with Seb had the lead on the safety car, and that's just the way it is. Things often happen like that my way. Now, that's a man who's beaten mentally as far as I see it. He's convinced that bad luck follows him. So what's the point? He's going to be third all year.
I hope not. We had that conversation towards the last third of last year. If he's already talking like that...
Exactly. No. He said, I've got nothing to smile about.
He had the same thing happen this time, but he made it work this time, whereas last time he just lost out on the start to Button. You know, it wasn't really anything he did wrong as such. It was just that Button got it absolutely right.
You know, I'm going to mention it every podcast, I swear, but I spent a night with the McLaren chief designer. And
name dropper.
He kept on talking about, designer of the cars, not the Formula One stuff, but he just kept on talking about, the boss of McLaren is Ron Dennis. He was just saying Ron Dennis is basically like Steve Jobs. He is in so much detail and so perfectionist and so demanding that... it is unreal. We finished at, I think, 2:30 that night, and he said I'll be up in the office at 7 in the morning, and if I'm not, then Vaughn will be asking where I was, and just utter demand of people and product. And when Lewis is saying that type of thing, I just think, how does that fit between the boss of the company and if Lewis is in that zone? I can see it with Jensen. He's, you know, he's bang on what he should be doing. His whole family, his whole management is there, but it doesn't seem like the Ron Dennis way, does it, if he's talking like that?
Yeah, and that's especially, you know, when you consider Ron Dennis was the one that brought Hamilton in. You know, right from, you know, being handed his phone number, you know, when he was a little kid, karting.
I mean, there's a point
brought him up here through, and that, you know, he doesn't want that kind of mindset from the driver he's put that much into, does he?
There's a point here in the chat room, Steve, which I think you've just responded to, which that's twice now you've mentioned this guy, and you have said that you spent the night with him. Is there? There's obviously a lot of love going on, but I just wonder if it's kind of that bromance stuff or not.
Absolutely. It wasn't a one-night stand. It was obviously a love fest.
Whole night. Absolutely. Whole night, baby.
To summarise then,
all night.
Hamilton on pole, Button on second, Shuey in third. Impressed?
Yeah, that was... I mean, that's just showing how far the car's come as well, the Mercedes car, because didn't Rosberg do quite well out of qualifying too?
He was seventh.
Seventh.
Or eighth.
Yeah, so he didn't exactly do too bad, you know, himself.
Well, I was actually going to say, I mean, for me, this season, the Mercedes have actually been the disappointment so far, because they've promised a lot in quali and not delivered, a bit like the Renaults as well.
Well, they're suffering from tyre deck problems, aren't they, again, like last season? Yeah. But do you think this year's car is more like the classic car which Schumacher drove versus the newer breed with the assisted downforce that Rosberg was possibly more used to?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, very possibly. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's also one that he'd probably had more input into again, like he did at Ferrari. He turned around the Ferrari. Yeah, well, he helped turn it around into an absolutely amazing car, didn't he?
Yeah,
and he's trying to do the same over a number of years at Mercedes.
Mm. They've obviously done something.
I think that's why he was brought in to do the same job and develop that team into a top tier team with the McLarens and Red Bulls and Ferraris. Because I'm sure once you know he's only got a limited life there, a few more years, and I think that's they're not seeing that he may well win a world title, but they're certainly thinking that they're going to help him get the team up to where it needs to be.
I mean, certainly from the practice sessions in Australia, it did seem that, you know, it was being dominated by Mercedes engines, you know, Mercedes power, whether it be in the Mercedes or the McLaren or the Force India have also got them. It was all Mercedes engines that were up at the top of the practice times. That changed in the race and qualifying, but...
Yeah, well, it's all good
it
development.
It seemed to be there, you know, when you got the session, you know, the test session, effectively.
Yeah, I mean, it's all good development for Mercedes, and I understand that McLaren have got a limited time frame before their contract ends with Mercedes anyway. So I can't imagine that Mercedes are going to be in too much of a hurry to renew that afterwards if the engine's doing really well.
Mm. Webber and Vettel then at 4 and 5, and for the second time, Webber outperforms Vettel. I mean, there's a conflict of setup as well in the Red Bull camp. Webber's going with his own gut feeling over Vettel and has consistently outperformed him there in two races. And,
I mean, that seems to be the type of approach that Jensen took last year.
What?
He was taking a different approach to his teammate. Yeah,
I mean, it's important that the driver does their own thing, I think, and gets the car that they feel comfortable with. But Webber and Vettel have always, they were opposed last year in setup quite a bit. And Webber seems to have the better hand. And Webber's actually starting now, which he didn't do last year. He's getting off the grid.
That's true.
Yeah. I like Webber.
Grosjean in 6, Rosberg 7, Alonso 8, Perez at 9th, which was good for them for HRT, and Ryan 10. No Force India, unfortunately. Tough going for the Force India, unquote, the coverage. Interesting point from Button at the start before we went off. They were talking about the possibility of weather playing a big factor, and he said, we don't know what to expect at the start. And I noticed an awful lot of them started with the wet intermediates.
Are they
allowed to?
I think everybody did in the end.
Well, no, they're supposed to start with the tyres that they qualified in, aren't
not
they?
Not if the weather conditions.
But the weather returns.
So if it's like declared a wet.
That would be race. Too dangerous.
No, absolutely. So I wondered whether that was a rule thing.
Just
no, come on, Steve. That really would be stupid.
Finished with.
You want to be like? Would you like it to be in a clown's car where bits fall off after the start as well, and bloke comes out?
He wants a repeat of that Belgian Grand Prix starting.
Yeah, that Belgian Grand Prix.
That's what he wants.
1998, that was Spa.
Yeah.
Joe, see if you can get that Belgian Grand Prix at Spa out of YouTube and play it.
It is on YouTube. I've seen it on there. Oh, in fact, I think it's featured on our show before.
So, now, Chris hasn't seen the first nine laps, unfortunately, but. I thought it was horrific conditions. I was gobsmacked they even started, to be honest. I mean, it was just spits and spots. When Jake was out on the track, there were spits and pots, and you could see the shadowing underneath the safety car. But when they started off, there was an awful lot of spray up there, and it looked like it was only going to get worse. And the visibility, I mean, Schumacher at the end said, you know, I was just praying as I got round, I couldn't see a thing. And you couldn't see a thing. There was nothing, no visibility at all off the onboard cameras.
Mm. The first 15 laps were the best.
Well, just before they brought out the safety car.
Well, I was like six of those were the safety car.
Jensen apparently reported that the last sector was like a lake.
Yeah, yeah. Last sector is like a lake, unquote, but that's lap seven.
But
that was the thing. It was like
on the
lap one.
Just on the start, I think Schumacher, the vein master, and also indeed, the start master, just probably came away from that whole first quarter of the race just thinking, oh no, that was rubbish. I bet he really had to swallow his pride on that, because he went from, was it third?
To be fair, Grosjean was involved with that whole situation with him, really, wasn't he? It wasn't exactly his own, you know, entirely his own fault.
He was hit by Grosjean.
I think Schumacher would finish significantly higher, but for the brush, yeah. And Grosjean was losing it all right over the place as he lost it in the end anyway on seven. I mean, he's the only retirement of the day, and he you know, for the first 50 laps, and he took it out on four. He was sliding backwards and forward, left, right, and centre. Yeah. So
I'm surprised he didn't hit more people, to be honest, after what I was seeing with that, you know, especially from some of the onboard views.
I couldn't get over the pit lane. I mean, all through the race, the pit lane was just horrific in terms of. I was gobsmacked. There was no collisions.
Yeah, because when you were changing tyres, it was getting pretty chaotic. But
they were slacking them at pit stops again, weren't they? As well.
Yeah, both Red Bull and there was another team I saw do it. Ferrari, was it Ferrari? Was only a few seconds between releasing one car and the next car coming in.
I mean, it's going into something like the 40th lap, but the Mercedes pit, they had an overhead view, and you saw Schumacher come in, and then you saw Rosberg come in immediately afterwards. I mean, it was literally like he'd just gone, and the next car's coming in, and the tyres are there already.
Somebody thought they had actually put the wrong tyres on, apparently, in one of the commentaries. I can't remember whether it was Sky or BBC.
There was a concern that they might have done, but I don't think it actually happened. But that's, you know, fair play to the pit crews, because that takes a heck of a doing.
Yeah.
Mm.
I've annoyed Mr. Super Chicken. Because Mr. Super Chicken said that he missed the first 15 laps, and then I said that the 15 laps, the start, was brilliant, and it was. So I've annoyed him. So
it wasn't.
Apologies.
It really wasn't. I mean,
it was good.
No,
it wasn't. You were watching Sky. You had a gold hour of the safety car going round and round and round.
Those two beers are getting to you, Ian.
No. He also had the Sepang flea market.
No, I was watching BBC, mate.
All right.
They red flagged it on 9, and then the safety car didn't go in until 13. So.
14.
Okay, 14.
An hour later,
just trying to assess the condition.
And 15, Perez takes the lead and holds the lead for most of the way. How good was that?
Excellent.
Oh. I got that Perez actually only held the lead for a lap before Alonso took it from him on lap 16.
It just shows how close the cars are. It's at that level at the moment, it's not much to tell the difference. I loved it for that marketing department and that that was just a huge win for them to get in second. Because when they're marketing for the whole next year and a half, going into next season, you know, they were second. And that advertising alone of that effect is just brilliant for the whole whole circuit.
Did you see Peter Sauber in tears at the end of the race as well?
Yeah. In the post-race stuff, they did use the fact that they also won in Canada with Kubik when they were under the... It was the same team, but under the BMW.
First Mexican to finish that high in a Grand Prix for 41 years. Not bad. He's going to get a free beer when he gets home, isn't he?
I'd imagine so.
More than
Una cerveza, por favor. He's going to be fine. He's going to have plenty. Button.
More like a bottle of tequila, but, you know.
Oh, no. Can't be. He's driving.
That'll fuel his next race, fine.
Right, so what about Jensen's contact on 16? Turn 9, he flies in there. There's a little bit of a gap. He goes for it. He said afterwards that he couldn't stop, but he didn't look like he was trying to stop. He looked like he was trying to take. And he struck the HRT of what's-his-face.
I think what's-his-face like was going to get out of the way. That's what Jensen expected.
Yeah, he wasn't expecting to be in that same place, and you know, he was expecting to not break so early. Because it did seem like that HRT braked, well, a lot earlier than Jensen did, obviously. But possibly too early for the corner.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Jensen really cocked up there. Because I think he was going to go around it. He wasn't shown the door, and he carried on with it. And I thought he was quite lucky not to get a penalty for that, because that didn't look like a necessary contact at all.
I agree, Ewan.
Oh, blimey. Me and Sarah agree. Anyone else agree with me?
No, same thought went through my mind as well.
Just me then.
Yeah, I mean, he did actually say after the race, didn't he? It's like, yeah, it was entirely, you know, his fault. You know, he did go in too hotter than he'd intended.
I thought it was interesting he said he couldn't stop, though, because that would be like kind of, I know it's my fault, please don't give me a penalty. Can they give a penalty afterwards?
Yeah, they can do. It can be investigated after the race. Sometimes it happens. Normally it happens if the driver goes out.
Yeah, I saw
him
coming. I thought, nah, come on.
And they might be given a 5-place grid drop at the next Grand Prix.
Well, what about Mr. Vettel? I mean, is Mr. Vettel going to be reprimanded for his sign language?
Should be.
I think he should. I really think he should.
The boy's throwing his toys out the pram, isn't he?
Well, I made some notes, and I've looked at the post race interview, and Vettel said there's some idiots driving out on the road. They're obviously out here too, and I've put down Vettel's obviously pissed off because he's having to work for a living now. Yeah, he's finding it very hard.
Was that the same interview where the cucumber comment came from?
Oh, I haven't seen that. What was the cucumber?
Apparently in one of the interviews, he actually said Karthikeyan's a cucumber or something like that. You know, some weird, you know, basically an insult saying, oh, he's a vegetable, he shouldn't be out on the track, sort of.
Was it strong?
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm glad to see he's got the correct genus, but, I mean, is that a translation from German that's just gone awry? Cucumber obviously means something different and far worse.
That's what I was kind of thinking, lost in
possibly,
translation.
Yeah.
Something.
Yeah.
If a German calls you a cucumber, it's far worse. There we go. German cucumbers.
There's a show title.
Oh, blimey. So Perez, out in front on 41, has to come in for tyres, lets Alonso past, and that's the last chance he sees, really. And nearly loses it. Did anyone clock the message from his crew? We need this position, we need this position. Take it carefully, take it carefully.
Yeah,
it was on lap 50.
Yeah.
And then the next lap
he
runs
wide. Was that when he was on slicks?
He went in on 41, I think, to get intermediates.
Yep, slick, hard tyres.
You went for the hard tyres, sorry, because Alonso was on the
first
softs.
Didn't he?
Yeah, and they reckon he was going to be slower. But then when he was getting really close, I mean, he got his gap down to the DRS zone for under half a second. And his radio just immediately cut in, no, we need this position, we need this position. And there was an interesting comment immediately by Coulthard that this was a Ferrari-influenced message because,
because they have
they're
the same
supplied
engine,
by Ferrari.
Effectively.
Yeah. I think that's conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
It struck me as that as well because, for it to be a coded message, they would have had to have predicted this kind of situation coming up and have a code ready. I just don't
imagine
buy that.
Stefano Domenicali hacking it down the pits to the Sauber garage saying, "Oi, Peter Sauber, tell your guy to hang off, otherwise we'll take the engines out of your car." I can't see that happening somehow.
No. Yeah. I think he got distracted by the message, because he was obviously trying to concentrate and then suddenly, radio message.
Well, we know the radio messages are delayed slightly. I think it was more Sauber going, "Oh my God, guys, we're going to get some points here." And they sent the message, hence, and it tallies with the pit stop strategy they brought him in after Alonso because they didn't want to get him tangled up with Alonso and lose all the points. So, if on balance, I was on the edge of my seat watching it.
Yeah, absolutely.
In balance, they probably made the right call.
I thought a direct line at that point. Because you look at the insurance for a 21-year-old and a car that powerful, mate. They would be thinking he's going to bend it up, no question. So
Driving foreign country.
Exactly.
Yeah, they've got to have
unfamiliar track. He's 21 years old. He's out there. He's Mexican. I mean, Mexicans aren't renowned for good driving. I'm not going to say anything's racist here. I'm sorry, Jeremy Clarkson, but don't.
He's driving at 200 miles an hour.
Exactly, 200 miles an hour in a powerful car. A 21-year-old Mexican can do a lot of damage. We're in the millions. Yeah. And they just thought we're never going to get the premiums down. It's going to be $4,000 a race here if we're not careful, let alone a year.
Potentially tangling with a Spaniard in an Italian car.
Yeah.
Has anyone ever thought of doing that? Ringing up Direct Line for a quote and saying, "Hi, can you give me the specifications of the car?" Well, it's got an F duck on the front.
Well, it's a Renault. The model's the RBR.
How much is it worth? Ooh, £250,000.
Oh, and the rest.
Does it have any modifications, sir? Well, mid-season,
the whole car.
Is it actually road legal? That's the bird, isn't it?
It comes with a full grid team and cones and a closed circuit. If that counts.
Yeah. Where do you park it at night, sir?
In the garage.
Have you got a no claims bonus? Well, I have until the third race.
You know what? The Direct Line website has not got their telephone number on.
Good job.
Really?
I can't.
So you can't get a Direct Line to Direct Line?
I was going to say,
you're going to take this room service thing an extra stage further, aren't you? You're going to ring and go, "Hello, my name's Jim Rankin. I'm looking for a quote, please, on an F1 car on road legal."
No, don't say anything.
Right, I'm now. Can somebody post Direct Line Web's number in the, and we'll ring them up.
How many seats does it have? There we go. Exit the chat room. One.
No, I want to call you. What's your number?
Is it a four door? No.
How many passengers does it carry?
9 o'clock. Oh,
well,
no,
one if they sit on the side pod.
It could be a two door if you count engine covers coming off.
Could.
Lines open 8 on the AM to 9 PM, doors, yeah. Monday to Friday.
Are there kind of any other drivers?
Yeah, what? Well, can I
put the wife
one's
on it for no extra?
Teammate, one's the test driver.
Church will be open.
Is the car garaged overnight?
How many miles do you think you'll be doing in that in a year, sir?
Contact.
Does it have Thatcham approved security?
So we get.
Oh, this comment, security system. I remove the steering wheel when I leave.
Requires extra man to start engine.
They all close it now. Can we do the next F1
the onboard
half eight, and I'll ring them up on and see what they say.
Record it, Steve. We can play it during
just
the show.
It, yeah, we'll play it. Yeah.
All right. Okay, I'll ring them up in the week.
Oh God, that's gone off the rails, isn't it? So anyway, Maldonado blows his engine on the last lap. That's got to suck really badly. What about Vettel? Stop the car, stop the car. No, go, finish, finish, finish. No, stop the car, stop this car, stop the car. And what, does he actually finish or not?
No.
He didn't finish. So he got a 24th place based on the fact that he didn't cross the line, but that's where he was.
No, I think he got 11th.
13th, whatever it was.
Yeah, he still got classified. Yeah.
He got classified, but so did he pull the car over in the end?
I don't know. I don't know whether he got it back to the pit. I mean, I was starting to think about, hang on a minute, what are they doing? I thought the FIA had outlawed this thing about if the car doesn't finish the race, they can change the engine. I thought, wonder what I wondered if that's what they were thinking, and then they changed their mind, which is they realised, oh, we can't do that. We'd have to justify to the FIA why we stopped the car before the end of the race. Yeah, so we better keep going.
Yeah, but then someone came back on and said, no, stop the car right now.
Mm.
It was almost like, you know, you've got no oil in the engine, you better pull over, otherwise we're knackered.
Well, wasn't there another comment?
It was like they're trying to save it.
It was apparently related to the KERS battery.
Oh, go on.
Oh,
well, that was after the third message. And I can't remember who it was now. I think it was Brundle who came back and said that he'd been told it was KERS related. In which case, yeah, you kind of want to stop pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, isn't it Red Bull?
Well, we know they've had lots of
the KERS in the past.
Yeah,
well, exactly. Well, New is no fan of KERS, is he?
Yeah. I mean, so is this the KERS as in PRS, weren't they? You know. Weber certainly isn't a fan of the KERS.
We know they ran with lightweight packs last year, so they had less KERS time than everybody else.
Mm.
So if they've not quite perfected it yet, we know also this was one of the things I liked about Sky's coverage this year. Ant Davidson was it Ant Davidson or was it Brundle? I can't remember now. That's how bad my memory is. But there was some analysis of the four stages of the Red Bull exhaust and how it had been adapted, and they were tweaking things and showing that they're still trying to get it right. And the ending remark was, well, if a genius like Adrian Newey can't get this right, then imagine what the other teams are going through.
Mm.
With regards to how they're
in contrast, did you see on the BBC Gary Anderson trying to demonstrate the Mercedes F duct with a picture of the car and like a highlighter?
No, I didn't. That's for me to watch tonight, I think.
Definitely worth watching.
Low tech
from
Martin.
Sounds great. It's like Sky, yeah, they've got a big iPad on the wall. We've got a photo with a highlighter on it.
A big iPad. Two pretty assistants talking.
Sad.
I haven't seen that.
So the final result, Ferrari win and have leapt in. I thought it was quite interesting because when they were saying, well done, Alonso, when he clipped back in, he sounded like Sacha Baron Cohen doing a really bad impression of Borat. But Perez got a second. Fantastic result. I mean, you've got to say, that's real, you know, fairy tale stuff, isn't it? That's what the season really needed. Just to,
it would have been fairy tale if he'd won. But it's still fantastic for him. I was so pleased for him.
Yeah. It's still a really good result, and hopefully something that will be repeated. I'd love to see him back up there again fighting.
Can we begin a drive of the year leaderboard? And can I nominate his drive in that race?
Are we doing like a post-fantasy race thing?
Think man of the match, but drive of the year. I think perhaps best in first impression of the year. Because that's
we have driver of the day.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, we do a magic moment, but that doesn't have to be the magic moment. Why don't we do like a thing where we nominate a person for driver of the day, and then we add those up at the end and give a prize out at the end, and we'll see if we can get the driver on to accept the prize, because that's really going to happen. But you never know, eh? Kimi Raikkonen may need it.
Yeah.
Because he's done bugger all so far.
Mr. Monotone.
You're saying, Perez, you don't think anyone's going to top that this year as the drive from behind, the underdog win?
What a race. People are going to be following him a lot next race.
Oh, yeah.
I think the other thing is as well, you look at that and you kind of go, well, it's a lottery, it's a wet weather race, therefore, you know, he made a good advantage of it. But don't forget, he started in the top 10 on the grid. He was ninth.
He was ninth.
No, he's put the qualifying in.
Yeah, but I think he was up to this race, and possibly still, he's underrated as a driver. We didn't see a lot of him last year because of his Monaco accident, and he's got the pace, obviously.
I do think that more of that was purely on merit than he's been given credit for, if you see what, you know, I mean, a lot of it is being attributed to the conditions.
When I saw the result at the beginning, before the race, and the fact that it was a wet race. And I thought, oh, okay. Perez obviously was in the right place at the right time. Typical, you know, what can happen when it gets messed up by
typical rain and stuff like
that.
Mexican.
But when I actually watched the race, yes, he did. He was in the right place at the right time. He was the first person to change his tyres on lap one. But he certainly deserved that from the way he drove the race. Yeah. So he did that on the, he got that place on merit.
Yeah.
Not just because it was a wet race.
I thought it was the most amazing
race. He was his own strategy call as well to do that straight away.
Absolutely.
The most amazing race that we've had in the last 6 months.
Ignoring
the pause in the non-season bit. Because seeing a guy come in from you know, the middle of the field to second, that's amazing. And, you know, in a world where we used to have the Vettel Webber 1-2 boredom of that was, it was just amazing to see that change so early on in the season. Just makes the whole of the rest of the season really light up and get exciting.
I'm thinking this season we'll see a lot more of that from different drivers. Like, you know, I can see Kimi coming in and getting, he should get at least a win, I think, if, you know,
he's certainly heading that minimum. Way.
Why?
Because he's not cool sunglasses.
I must admit, when he came back, I thought he was going to take a couple of races to get used to it.
Yeah.
But he's been blinding.
Mm.
Absolutely blinding. You know, I mean, okay, the quality of Australia, it kind of put him out of any chance of really doing anything decent. Mm. But the way he, even in the race, he drove fairly well.
Yeah.
But this race,
he's still done well with his position that he's had. You know, he's done well from where he's ended up on the grid.
Yeah. He was fifth in here.
Mm.
I get the impression we're going to be making excuses for Kimi Raikkonen all season, though. Oh, he would have been brilliant, apart from the fact he ripped the crap out of the gearbox and they had to change it and get a 5-grid penalty.
That might be the case, Ewan. You may well be right.
I think there's going to be an awful lot.
This is only your second race back.
You know, I think Kimi would have done so much better if he's going to be a common phrase. And I think Kimi's got this idea of, you know, he's going to be returning and everyone wants Kimi to win and, oh, Kimi. But I think he's going to be, an also-ran, I'm afraid, and I don't think he's going to stand out in the slightest.
What will be interesting, though, is to compare his return to Schumacher's.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think Schumacher's been more consistent, surely.
Schumacher did have a better first race back, but the second race, I think Kimi did do a better second race.
I think Kimi's car is slightly more competitive than Shuey's was when Mercedes first started.
But yeah, but I still think that's another thing that will be an interesting comparison through the season. The return seasons from guys who've been away for a few years.
Mm.
I think there's a couple of comments around the Perez thing that really stood out for me that made it important. First thing was that on lap 50, Sauber is right up with Alonso. Perez is the fastest man on the track at the moment, says Coulthard.
Mm.
Fastest man on the track, fastest man on the track. Can't take that away from us. And then the last thing that comes out is when you look at the final positioning, you've got Hammy and Webber. Now, okay, Hamilton's been out in front, not by a huge amount when a safety car comes out, but he was out in front. But Webber was right there with Perez. Perez was right next to him at the point that the safety car comes out, and Perez gets the second, Webber gets the fourth, and nothing's touched Webber. Nothing has collided with him. Nothing's given him an extra long pit stop. There's no collusions over, you know, he comes out and people stop him getting out and that kind of thing. Mm. Perez has outdriven Webber at that point. I mean, good on him.
It's a good point, Ewan.
Yeah. I mean, that was also an interesting point about the pit stops. It's like, I could see why either of the McLaren guys would be annoyed about their pit stops. But at some point, there was a theory going around that they deliberately screwed up Lewis's. That's another conspiracy that I just don't buy on that one.
Well, he had Lewis had two slow pit stops.
Yeah.
But that was just because of the fact that they cocked up the back lift, hadn't they?
Exactly.
And that split second just meant
deliberate.
Massa was him.
Perez is good odds for Perez, 250-1 on the championship for the year.
I think
he's
you can keep
at the
that money,
isn't he?
Worth a fiver, you think? Maybe just.
I can say if you're thinking of a fiver, get another beer sent to me room because I've finished the second one now.
What?
Because that's more valuable than putting a fiver on Perez to win the world championship.
It was a tenner a pint, your room service.
I hope not.
Did you? Did you pay for it, Mr. Neighbour, or did you actually put it on his bill?
No, he did pay for it. They told me he paid for it at the door. Thank you very much, Steve.
Lewis Hamilton is now the odds favourite for the year championship. Last week it was Vettel.
Do you think Lewis, that's because he's been consistent?
Well, tell me this. It says two. Does that mean two to one?
They normally don't say 2-1. It normally means it's two to one. Yeah.
So if I put a pound on, I get two back.
Yeah, plus your stake.
Really?
Yeah.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
Right. Where's my 20p?
And then Jenson Button is 5-2. This is Formula 1 championship betting odds on odds checker, whatever they are called. Potential sponsor, oddschecker.com. Really good place to go to if you want to find out who's put money on.
Are we not getting sponsored by them?
Are we not? Oh, okay, sod off then. No. Right.
Or Direct Line, for that matter.
2-1, that's pretty good on Hamilton, isn't it?
I
prefer 5-2 on Button.
Yeah.
The thing is, so the final grid. With those drivers, the positions do seem to have been reversed. I mean, I did see a comment that Hamilton was now the consistent man and Button was like the one that won a race and then was way back.
It was only two races.
It wasn't his fault that he was way back.
It was his fault, but...
It
was only two races turning. I think it was a bit odd to start making opposite comparisons with last year.
Exactly, I think he'd done something to his suspension as well because he wasn't getting any traction at all to start off with, and I think that was suspension rather than tyres. Final grid then. So we got Raikkonen in five after Hammy and Webber. I thought the next five places were really interesting. Senna, De Resta, Werner, Hülkenberg and Shuey. I thought those were good positions to have. They were very much... De Resta did very well to come from nowhere almost to take that seventh. And I thought that was because a lot of cars finished this race. That was a good, healthy finishing roster for F1 going forwards because I'm enthralled now. I'm intrigued. Salivating for China.
Is it nine different teams in the top 10?
Yeah, I can well believe it.
Yeah, easily.
The last little fact from my... odds checker thing, whatever. Perez, 50-1 for the year. Massa, have a guess. So Perez, 50-1.
Is it in the thousands?
1,000-1.
Yeah, Massa is 500-1. No, 1,000-1.
That's not worth a pound, Steve. That's
isn't it?
That's a pound down the tubes,
mate. Better odds on whether
even Ferrari Perez will tell you not to do that.
More of a bookie's favourite than Massa. Yeah. In a Ferrari.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Massa's better odds than whether Massa gets sacked or not.
Massa's got to be canned before the end of the year.
That's where the odds are going to be going, isn't it? Massa being sacked.
Do you want the odds for China, then?
Go on. What have we got?
Right, the odds for China are... Who's number one? Lewis Hamilton. 9-4.
No.
Second, Jenson Button. Vettel. 4-1.
Head of Alonso.
Button, 3-1. Might put some money on that.
What, Jensen?
I don't think Button's.
So, was there a figure for Webber in there?
Webber is 12-1. Alonso
that's
is 7-1.
If you've got a fiver burning a hole in your pocket, mate, have 12-1 on Webber. Definitely.
Really? I'd put a fiver on Alonso, actually.
No, I don't think that does Webber.
7-1.
Maybe justice, does it?
Raikkonen? Is that right? 20-1. Rosberg, 25. Schumacher, 25. Perez, 28. Massa, 150. Come on, Massa.
150-1 for the next race.
Well, I don't like Massa, do they?
Dude, your hair looks like a character off Doster Zeus.
Who?
You.
I think you mean which character?
Wow.
Any of the characters of Dr. Zeus.
Is it? That's without gel support.
Let's get excited at the odds.
Even.
Right. This podcast and many others could not be possible without the very valuable help of UK2.net. We're totally indebted to them. They've supported us for 3 years. They're going to carry on supporting us, and we're very lucky to have them around. We would ask you, in return for looking after us, that you look after them, because that's the long and the short of any sponsorship agreement, isn't it? If you need any web services, domain names, web hosting, DNS management services, if you want co-location services, if you want a virtual server, or if you want a dedicated server, give them a shout. Just give them a try and just go and see what prices they've got. I think you'll be pretty impressed by whatever you see on there, full stop. Then add to the fact that you're going to get 15% off because you're a Bagel Tech listener. Type in the offer code Bagel Tech and 15% comes off your basket before you even go any further. And you can still get discount if you're transferring in another service and you want to use DNS management charges, then they get wiped off as well if you use Bagel DNS, and you can use both codes. So your basket could literally come down by 30 or 40% before you even get started. Please give them a go. Go to our website, britishtechnews.com, and bottom left-hand corner, you'll see a logo for them. Click on that. They'll know we sent you. And use the offer code BAGELTECH or BAGELDNS. We're working on changing the codes over, but for now, Bagel will still apply. And thank you very much, UK2, because the F1 podcast and all the mirth and merriment that goes around it would not exist without you. Never mind all the rest. We love you to bits. Cheers. Right. Have we got a magic moment? Would you start us off, Tone? Where's your magic moment, mate?
Probably the restart, actually. I thought, there were quite a few moves that went on from that restart that it's hard to pick one, really.
So just the restart, full stop, not even any map, but within the restart.
It was hard. I mean, it was...
Restart.
It's easy to pick a driver of the day, but I don't think there was really a moment that stood out. Because, all right, Perez had that little off. I wouldn't call that a magic moment, though.
No. Okay, well done, mate. Thank you. Steve, what have you got for us as a magic moment?
I got a personal moment, actually. I really enjoyed it.
You talk about it. Was it with the guy from McLaren?
I went to a meal with him.
Were you playing with his drive shaft?
I've got a 5-year-old girl, and I quite enjoy watching the Grand Prix, as you probably guess. And if there's anyone else in the who's listening who's got some girls, young, who are just trying to watch sports and get them interested in it, but. The best bit for me was my little one was she's really got a fondness for Jenson Button for some reason. She just has heard the name. So we spent the half of the race shouting for Jenson Button to get from 16th to 15th to 14th to, I think he finished in 14th, but she was just really up for it in terms of supporting his progress for some reason. But it's really good. I'd just be interested if anyone's got some of the girls that are kind of grown up and how they've encouraged them to get into the Formula One more than just kind of coming in and saying, oh, what's on, Dad? Oh, it's Formula One, and then walking away. So, yeah, mum was enjoying the Formula One with my little girl. It's the first time she's really got excited about somebody going from, 16th to 14th, but we supported him through those places. That's my personal moment. Sorry, it's not very good, but it's a personal one for me.
That's good. Just think,
that is good. And just think next time you can explain F-ducting to her and all sorts of stuff because you learnt about it on this podcast.
Yep. If somebody can explain me, that'd be good.
No, that was good. I can't get Ellis into this at all. He watches it with me and then he's like, I've had enough dough, can I watch Skylanders now? Sarah, magic moment, please.
I've actually got three.
No, you're not allowed three. You've got to pick one. You're not doing that.
Yeah,
we've done all of the magic moments throughout the whole race.
Well, I was going to pick Perez hassling Alonso, but I think one that actually touched me was Kobayashi nailing Schumacher around the outside. I thought that was pretty awesome.
I tell you what, if you're gay and you're listening to this show, it's been an absolute target.
It's possible to actually say anything innuendo. Without it being taken as a
and
double
Sarah,
entendre.
Well, Sarah's been the worst one.
Yep, I do it in all innocence.
Yes, righto.
We don't believe you.
Okay, Kobayashi taking
Michael Schumacher's
car on the outside of the track.
Thank you. That was very good. He did. I saw him do that, actually, yeah. Very good. Thank you very much, Sarah. She's upset now.
Nice. Kind of like,
And Christopher W., do you have your magic moment for us?
Well, yeah. Okay, so I was thinking of what I said last week, and it was probably a little bit mean. It's going to be mean again this week, because seeing Vettel's tyre destroying itself made me think, oh, great, we won't see Vettel in the top 10.
Oh, and he's crashed.
And why couldn't this happen last year?
Exactly. The man had too much good luck last year. He deserves some bad luck to balance the karma.
Am I still here?
You're still there.
Yeah.
You're running a dial-up quality now. It's delicious.
Am I still here?
I love watching the UN. Ooh, is it working, face?
It's got better now. The video's got better anyway,
Ewan. Oh, as you said that.
Oh, he's gone.
Yay!
Yeah, but who agrees with me that Vettel had
gone? Let's run riot.
Yeah, the kids can take over the asylum.
Order him 60 beers quick while no one expects him to.
Steve, get on the phone.
Just get three guys with just this trolley of beer.
Don't answer it, Joe.
Is that too much? They can't cope.
Yeah, the next thing we'll know, we'll tune into the live stream and we'll have renamed it. Kind of, yeah. I don't know.
He's probably
Anti-Brit Network or something.
Yeah.
This is the podcast takeover.
Chris, brilliant bit of moment.
Oh, it's just great. And then the fact that he seemed to gun it down the back straight to get to the pits, thereby destroying his tyre and possibly his under tray as well. Because the pit crew were there at the end of it, kind of, you know, they put the new tyre on. Then they kind of had to unwrap the fabric of the old one from his rear hub. Just to set him off again. And he cannot have been pleased.
He just got the feeling last year that he just had the winning car, and really, no matter what he did, it was just so advanced to anything else that he was just going to win. Whereas this time, it was just good to kind of see him just struggle like the rest of us.
Bit of reality,
it was good.
We saw him pull off some good overtakes, so we know he can race, but it's about time that he had a little bit more of a balanced experience.
No, but it's just like you, and he can't handle two beers. He has two beers, and then he just falls off the air because he just can't cope with it.
Yeah. And in the meantime, of course, that also means that Webber's going to be like, finally, and also Red Bull are going to get a little bit less TV time.
That's right.
Which is good for the smaller teams. Imagine how Sauber... We must just have sponsors knocking at their door now, which is great because then it promotes development.
Yeah, Ewan didn't notice that it was two pints of lager with two vodkas in each.
Hello?
I don't know if you noticed, but... Chris, I don't know if you noticed on the
four
press conference...
Four of these, bad headache.
On the press conference,
Perez, on his uniform, there weren't that many sponsor logos. I wonder how long it's going to stay like that for now.
Yeah, Telmex are just going, we got a sweet deal.
No wonder Peter Sauber was crying at the end of the race.
Good magic moment. Anything about Vettel failing is a magic moment in my book.
He hasn't won
two world titles.
It's a lovely bit of Schadenfreude to round it off.
Was that an emulation of the new Vettel finger there, Steve?
Oh, sorry, finger boy, yeah. Sorry.
It was the wrong one. It's the different one this year.
It was.
Yeah.
I just think people who have success just through being in the right place and just having the right car, it's good for him to fight for it. And now he's fighting for it.
I was surprised he didn't get any kind of penalty for that. you know, after the move, you know, the way he just kept the line, somebody else could have gone into him.
So, I was thinking this earlier.
Have we stopped recording, or are we still doing the show?
Still doing the show.
Okay, right, carry on.
Extended highlights.
Welcome back.
Given the magic moment.
This leads on from it. And given the seeming closer parity of the cars and the raw talent of some of these young drivers, do you think we could have a super special stage at the end? And the drivers are bolted into the seats and they play a game of musical chairs. So they get, you know, they play the music and everybody runs around and then they have to jump in the nearest car and do a lap. Yeah, you know.
But if they're already on a chair, Chris?
Well, just think of the comedy value, though. You know, 24 F1 drivers running around with their seats strapped to them, and then they have to jump into a car and then do a lap. It could be a lap.
So there's only 20 cars.
Strapped into one of them and running. Has anyone ever tried this?
Could be amazing.
Interesting comment from Super Chicken in the chat room here. Bitter, bitter. I think that's referring to Steve, possibly.
Hello.
Or is that a suggestion for you as next drink?
Please, please. Thank you.
It'd be you and
right,
Gia.
We'll be back again on the 15th of April. You've got a bit of a relax before we come back. It's the China Grand Prix on the 15th of April. It promises to be very picturesque and very nice, and we'll be there for it. The only one that we're waiting for is the Race of the Americas, because we're racing to see whether they actually finish the track in time or not, rather than anything else. Sorry?
In good old Texas.
It's not blinking America, China.
Race of the Americas. No, that's what I'm waiting for, to see if they finish the bloody track in time. Keep the rest of the season. We'll be back again for that. So whether it's the Sunday night or the Monday night, and whether I'm in a hotel or not, I have no idea. Thank you, Joe, for switching this evening. It's been very, very good.
Very good, Joe.
The least of our problems. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Blunt?
On Twitter at tone_720. It's a bit of a change of tag from last year.
Good, mate. Mr. Neighbour, where are you?
I'm on Twitter at Clothhead U. No, Clothhead HQ.
Yeah.
I thought I'd change it myself. I was too interested on Tony on why he's changed it. But Clothhead HQ.
You didn't order more beer for me, did you?
Might have. I'd just be annoyed. No, it's not beer. It's on the way.
It's on the way.
Dancing girls take longer than beer.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, it's fun for off camera.
You haven't ordered it.
Are you trying to get him drunk?
Sarah, where can we get you, mate?
More than that.
Sarah, where can we get you, mate?
You can get hold of me on the Twitters at SarahJaneUK.
Thank you very much. And finally, Mr. W.
Again, we're all on Twitter tonight at Christopher W, and feel free to tell me how crazy my F1 related ideas are.
No, they're great, mate. We love you up there. Thank you. I'm Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter, or you can get me at British Tech News. We're starting this end is going to be the official launch of the British Tech Network. We're going to start with the photo show at 2 o'clock on Friday, and then we've got the Tom Merritt is going to officially open us at 3:30 if he manages to get out of bed in time. There we go. He's promising he's coming this week, and we're hoping that he's going to talk someone else as a special guest into sliding by, but we'll have to wait and see on that one. Back with a big show on Thursday night. Daily Show is going to be on when I get down to it, if I can. Have a great week. Thanks for tuning in.